Welcome to episode 91 of The Iron Agenda, the podcast about War Machine, Hordes, and whatever else is on our minds. Hey, everybody, and welcome to The Iron Agenda, the podcast that you call Daddy. I'm Josh.
I'm Dave.
I'm Jason.
I'm Tim.
And I'm Lucas, otherwise known as Geist.
The ghost with the most.
How long have you been sitting on that one?
About 3 minutes.
He's the friendliest ghost.
Oh, okay. Getting my ghost mixed up.
That's right.
Happy Father's Day.
That's right. That's why you call us Daddy.
I just talked to my dad. He's getting my sister bought him a massage.
Smoky Rivers has a massage.
He has a massage today in Phoenix, Arizona. Lovely Phoenix, Arizona.
Was he like giving a radio play by play of the massage that's going on?
Currently,
this happy ending brought to you by the Iron Agent.
Are you a father, Lucas?
No, but eventually, maybe in the next year or two, we're looking at getting a little one.
They cost so much to purchase.
Yeah, they're like $500 or something.
Like, if you want a good one.
Well, Walmart has them for cheaper.
Yeah, if you go to clearance aisle. Have you been to a Walmart lately and seen their clearance aisles?
Oh, they're hilarious.
I've never seen one. It's like random crap in these aisles.
It's not always junk, though. I found some good things. I found like power strips for $1. I bought like 3 of them. They were perfectly fine.
I picked up a couple of LED flashlights that are like actual tripods to try and use for like photography.
Pretty sure you spoke about this last week.
I don't think you did it on the air, though, did you?
I don't know if I did, but quickly, I got them from the clearance line at Walmart.
Those are awesome.
My wife tells me I'm a tripod. I don't know what that means, though.
I mean, you're a Martian.
And welcome back, Tim. And welcome to the show, Geist.
That's right.
First-time caller, long-time lover.
Do you have the Walmarts up there?
Well, yeah, we do. I've never seen a discount aisle with them, though.
By the way, up there, we mean
Vancouver.
Vancouver.
The frozen north.
Oh, here's something.
It's not frozen. Vancouver's beautiful.
You might know this, Lucas. I know you don't live in Saskatchewan, but I'm to understand that Saskatchewan and Sasquatch have similar names for a reason. Like, one is named after the other. Is that correct from what you know?
Not as far as I know. I have no clue. I'm not really big on the whole Sasquatch myth background, though.
That's because Canada, it's not a myth.
It's a way of life.
For some people.
He's their prime minister.
Really? Because it was on the Adam Carolla podcast that I had heard this, because they were talking about how Bigfoot is kind of a stupid name because there's no originality in it. And they were wondering if the Native American term Sasquatch is equally stupid, like if it literally means like Bigfoot in Saskatchewanese.
Is that a word?
Yeah, no. I don't know. Saskatchewanese? No. Although they really should have their own language out there. But
oh, really?
I kind of skip over the middle of our country. Like you'll go from British Columbia to Alberta, and then if you're driving, you just usually fly over a couple provinces, landed.
So you have literal flyover provinces like we have flyover states.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
So it's like there's a lot of Kansas up in Canada.
Yeah.
I thought it was more like Iowa.
It doesn't matter. All barren crap. I have some friends in White Rock. White Rock's awesome.
White Rock's nearby me. You should come visit them and we can play a game.
Sounds good. Yeah, no, White Rock is like crazy. It's like it's like Miami, but like in Vancouver, because all the shops are like really... They're all really different, like the ones along the beach. They all are very brightly colored and very different styles and stuff. So it's a pretty cool little place up by Vancouver.
I don't know if we actually explicitly said it, so let's go ahead and wish everybody happy Father's Day. Happy
Father's Day.
And if you're not a father, go
get busy. Screw you. Yeah, go get busy. Get on that.
No, it's worth way more. Your Father's Day gifts are probably like finger paintings. So
yeah.
Watch out.
So, news. We got some news and stuff.
PP is the daddy of plastic battle boxes.
Apparently.
Ooh.
With plastic warcasters, apparently.
That's right. That's what I'm to understand.
And they are retailing for $50. Mm-hmm. Now, what was the retail of the last battle boxes? It was also about $50.
They kept the price the same.
Which was never really increased due to inflation.
Right.
So, the fact that they went to cheaper materials and kept the price the same... Probably just stop them from losing money on the deal.
Question is it a it's not a multi-part plastic jack, right?
I don't know.
That's my understanding. That's... Well, they haven't said so, and people have been asking about it a lot on the forums. I would have thought that if they were multi-part or multi-jack, you know, kits, that they would have said something on the boards. I'm assuming they're not.
I'm going to assume they're not. They just give you the pieces for those jacks. Which means I'm not going to buy the Signar or the Kator one.
So this is the thing, though. People are saying, you know, this is going to be the big thing at Gen Con. And by people, I just mean some people. It hasn't been said that this is the big thing. But if it is the big thing at Gen Con, that's a little lackluster, I think.
A little lackluster.
Because I won't be buying any of them.
I might buy the Trix one to paint up. Because that new Denegra is pretty sweet.
Exactly. Can you only get that caster in those battle boxes?
I think so.
I would think so.
See, that would be the draw.
There's a couple of them I like, but now I can't buy them.
Sorsha looks cool, and Krios looks cool.
Oh, the Sorsha's
cool.
The one I want. I hate all the Sorshas. They look so ugly. Well, I mean, Epic Sorsha's sweet, but that's not regular Sorsha. And
I'd say I might consider picking them up just because I kind of want to replace all my old Bone Jacks with the newer ones. But
you'll be able to buy the Bone Jacks.
Sure.
I'm sure.
Yeah, but if I want the model as well, then why not just buy the whole kit? Oh.
Here's my speculation. If these are going to be available at Gen Con, I'm also going to speculate that maybe the plastic kits, if they have them for the lights, will be out.
Oh, could be.
Yeah, why don't you go ahead and stick another Josh, Rod and Kator's
let
ass.
Me ask you this.
What's up?
How many plastic protector kits did you have?
I just purchased one.
And it is magnetized?
Uh-huh.
Never mind then.
I bought two.
No, if somebody had a spare Templar weapon, I would go ahead and buy the protectorate one to have the second caster and use that as my protectorate heavy that I was going to magnetize.
I have I have so many Cod Orbits because I bought two and I got lots. And I have Cyclone Cannons because I bought them off someone. Yeah.
So
for me, the one thing I do want to see at Gen Con, and it hasn't been announced, so I'm assuming it's not going to be the case, I want to see the IKRPG stuff.
Oh my God.
Not going to happen. Not even close to happening right now.
Oh yeah?
I'd need like a whole case of wet naps.
I do actually need to contact him. I have something to ask him.
Really?
Yeah.
Lucas, are you a role player?
I mean
the games, not like anything dirty.
Either way, he's a paladin. It doesn't matter.
Yeah.
back when they came out with the IK books is when I got into War Machine, and I used to bug Matt Wilson on his email showing him like 3D graphics stuff I was doing way back in 2000 for Warjacks, and kept asking him once I found out about War Machine when a demo program would start. And Jason actually was the one that called me up and signed me up for the program back when there was like 10 of us.
So you're one of those dirty dozen elite few, huh?
One of the few. People are coming back slowly, though. I'm seeing a lot of old names return to the forums, which is a good sign.
Yeah, Mark II does seem to be having that bit of effect. It's at the very least, people come back to see what's different, and a lot of people feel like they're sticking around.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely.
I know we've seen that locally. There's a couple of people, Brasidas, as some people know him on pretty much every forum.
Yeah.
Former Infernal.
Formal Infernal, former or one of the original press gangers that were in St. Louis,
right,
has come back and started playing again.
If you consider that playing.
Well, you know.
What else? There was something else that came out or was coming out.
We're also going to talk about the new cards and possibility of Primal in July.
Yeah, the decks are scheduled to come out July 7th.
Yeah, that's how about that?
Awesome.
A long wait.
Is that 3 weeks?
Yeah, about 3 weeks.
Meh. I've waited this long. I think 3 weeks is, you know.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, sure.
Well, the fact that we have a hard date and it's a full month before Gen Con.
I'm going to cryogenically
freeze
myself.
Which is key, I think.
Yeah.
I leave for New York that next day, so I need games that time. Speaking of Mark II cards, I got Moses the other day, and he's awesome.
The Rune Bearer dude?
He's got a card. And a Bomber. I have two cards from Mark II.
AK keeps calling him Trolley Moses.
I'm going to make him spreading
I like
water.
More
it's Trozus.
There's two options I have. One, make a broken tablet on the ground for the 10 commandments, or spreading water in front of him. I don't know which one I'm going to
do. I pick both.
Yeah, I could do both. And have him look like Chuck Heston. I appreciate
it. So give him a rifle? Guns and Trozus.
I can just picture him going, let my people go. Let my troops go. Yes, he's Sean Connery all of a sudden.
Yeah, that's all I got. So I'm done for the episode.
Cool. But they also said Primal might be out in July. No date or anything. And the reason that this could be a big deal is because Horde's Genesis releases in July. And you'd think that they'd want the book to come out with a big release thing.
Especially with the rules in the book.
I've got to guess they have a PDF prepped.
The speculation is that it will come out the week that Genesis is, was that the 16th or 18th or something
I'm
like
not
that?
Sure.
They're saying that's when Genesis starts. So they're saying that the speculation is that the book will be out.
I think a PDF
week.
Would be a horrible idea for business. Decision because
then why would you ever
why would you buy the book if they're just going to toss
that's
the rules
true.
At you? All the faction books are coming out. I mean, you technically get everything you need.
My question is, why did they end up printing them overseas?
Yeah,
like, cost and price. I mean, I'm sure it's a business.
I'm sure
decision,
it's a business.
It's not because they
decision,
like the Chinese.
But
I feel like they're
no,
not
but I
do
just
that as much
you know.
Anymore.
I hope
after seeing this issue happen a couple times now, I would
right.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, it is definitely cheaper to print. Even with shipping, but yeah, you get these problems like stuck in customs, and that's the only reason that they haven't announced the release date for the book. They said that it was done and basically being shipped, and the intent is it for it to come out in July. It's scheduled to get here in July. unless the boat hits a barrier reef or something.
And customs. Customs is always a big thing.
Titanic.
Too. Well, I'm worried about the reef.
I heard they were going to use the Primal Mark II books to soak up all the oil.
Oh, the old Mark I cards. We should have just shredded them up, tossed them out there.
That would have been really awesome.
Yeah.
Gaming community saves world.
I just recycled all mine in one big
pile. Supposedly Kevin Costner's doing that, saving the world.
I made a house.
Do you read that article?
No. Yeah, he has this gadget really he patented. Cool. I don't know if he developed it.
I think
it
was his brother developed it or something.
It's like a water purification system that does, you know, X number of hundreds of gallons per hour or something. Apparently there's another one that does it like twice as much or something, but still the fact that it's there is interesting.
He probably got it from Waterworld when he was drinking his own pee.
That's right. You can add pee into Mr. Coffee and get Folger's Choice.
Good.
Wow.
So
Dana Carvey.
What else? Topic.
Yeah.
That's all I got on my little list.
There was another piece of news. There wasn't more news?
I don't have any more
news. No new previews, nothing?
Not that I could find.
We'll eventually be previewing Matt Wilson's baby.
Yeah, he's going to become a celebrating Father's Day next year.
That's right.
There you go. Congratulations, Matt.
Preemptive Happy Father's Day.
That's right. Dude, I'd be slapping.
You'd be slapping what? really. Let's see. And last week we talked about the countdown clock for White Moon Dream's new video game.
Yep.
Yeah. So we're looking forward to that. Maybe we'll end up talking to him again. That'd be good.
Hopefully.
Hopefully.
That'd be cool. They were nice guys. I really enjoyed talking with them.
They ordered
last year.
Never mind.
Say what?
Nothing. Continue. Continue.
Lucas, I forget. Did you go to Gen Con at all, or did you make it down last year?
The only Gen Con I ever made it to was Gen Con, I think it would have been 08, where I met my wife, and we haven't actually been able to afford to go back yet.
Oh, yeah, we were there at the same time. I guess we just didn't know each other.
No.
You went in 08?
I was there.
Years ago,
we
right?
all went in 08.
Yeah.
Well,
I went with the idea of, like, okay, I'm going to go, I'm going to hang out at the booth, meet a lot of people, and then I met... Well, at the time, this wonderful girl, Laura, my wife, and we hit it off and spent the entire rest of the convention together. And we pretty much have tried to be by each other's side ever since. So.
Now, she's not a Canadian right now, though, is she?
She's now a landed immigrant. That was a very expensive process.
Yeah.
Not to be gone into lightly. But she moved up here last April. April of 2009. And she's been here ever since.
Now, your April is still our April, right? You don't have some weird calendar up there, do you?
No.
The Canadian calendar.
So, like 13 months.
June is long.
They actually go by the IK calendar, so this year they're going to have the longest night festival.
Oh. You got to watch out.
You're such a nerd.
bad things happen on the longest night. Just watch out.
What happens on the longest night?
Alexia comes and messes your shit up.
Ooh. And then the scoring comes.
That wasn't in The Longest Night, though.
Thanks. I know.
But and then Green Lantern gets a black ring. So what are we doing?
I don't know. It's a good question.
Before this podcast, I said, what is our topic? And now we are at that
point.
We're
just riffing. We're like one of the stand-ups who just goes out there with nothing prepared and just riffs.
Those usually suck.
Are you sure we're not like that comedian that has nothing prepared and we go out there and bomb?
That might be you, but we're prepared.
We're prepared. We're prepared for the unprepared.
Okay, go ahead.
You're like Dane Cook Flanter.
I'm not like Dan Cook.
Good.
That's actually that double bagger thing. That's where I got that from, from a movie he was in.
Can I be Carrot Top?
You're not even close to Carrot Top.
But you are as annoying as Carrot Top. So
sweet.
So, guys, you've had some time to digest the Crix book. How do you feel? Last week, we really didn't get into the fluff. We didn't have our fluff guy here. Right. And we have a Crix fan right here as well as our fluff guy. So it just seems like it's all a perfect storm.
Well, Lucas was actually supposed to be the original guest, but it just didn't work out. So now here's your chance to shine.
Well, I've been working 6-day work weeks, so I haven't had a lot of time to peruse it. I've kind of glossed through a lot of the fluff, read some main points, and now I'm going to go back and start reading it. It seems pretty awesome. I was a little worried about the book because a lot of people were complaining about the fluff and Crix not really ever achieving anything. But I thought it was really good. Some of the best writing I've read so far, in my opinion.
Very cool. Tim?
It was. It's been the best fluff out of any of the books so far. And I really liked the Retribution book a lot. But this, there's a couple of threads on the big boards where people are complaining about Crix getting their butt handed to him a little bit. And it's like, you can lose a battle and win the war.
But this is what I want to know. I heard that from so many people. Where do they lose?
Well,
who loses?
I think people are focusing on a fight between De Negra and the old witch.
But no one lost there. They both
walked
away.
Here's where I think people because that the old always witch happens.
Let it happen.
Well, she's an old crone. She knows what she's doing.
People are kind of complaining because, like the other factions, they want all of their Crix heroes to have like the action hero moment where they're winning and, you know, kicking ass. But that's just not how Crix works. The fighting is actually not where Crix is making all their advances. It's the subtle stuff they're doing. The problem is that doesn't make a quote unquote entertaining story.
There's no spectacle to it.
Yeah, exactly.
Right.
Except for when they like a million warcasters be on top of a temple to stop Asphyxius.
Well, I think people were also upset because it was confirmed in this book that it was a Lich Lord that
it's Morbus, right?
Yeah, that Haley destroyed, and it, you know, people are like, well, we've had him in two scenes and he's dead already.
And as Doug Seacat said in his little thing, that job's up for grabs right now.
Oh, yeah.
I've already put in my application.
But you guys see his insider post where he had the graphs and the charts?
Oh, my God. That was so really, awesome. Really cool. With the dragons.
Oh, a new name for Legion Warlock.
Oh, yeah. Bethane.
Yes. I told Pat that his wife is blighted.
Oh, there
is
you go.
Is her name Beth?
Yes, it is.
So you can sing the Kiss song, Beth, to her.
Actually, her name is Beth Ann. So
it's kind of.
Is it really?
Yes.
Touching song.
So apparently we have a new, and we also have three additional Legion Warlocks coming out. Warlocks X, Y, and Warlock Z.
That's right. Because there was like a Dragon X, for example, in the whole Athink.
At least they didn't have 7, 8, 9 because, you know, 6 would be afraid of 7.
And I'm pretty sure
you gave the punchline before the joke.
I know.
I was setting it up. It worked in reverse.
I'm going to set up the joke so you're not surprised, guys.
Right.
Welcome to Iron Gender, where the punchline comes first.
It's because you wanted to get to the other side.
I did not think that the Crix fluff was the best. However, I did think the first story probably was the best story, but I like to keep it in whole, and I was not a big fan of the second portion.
The second part I thought was kind of hilarious, especially at the end.
It was kind of funny.
Like, that's funny.
Do you think we're kind of pissing people off by talking about essentially nothing?
I don't care.
No, we're talking about the fluff right now.
No, we're not spoiling it. We're like, you know what was awesome? The last part.
Fine. Let's couch this in terms that like it is more, I guess, interactive to the point. What do you guys like to see in fluff? What makes good versus bad fluff?
That's a good question.
I like to see when Drago busts out of chains and murders a whole bunch of men.
That was awesome.
Evocative imagery.
Yeah, I mean, you know, the whole game is based off war and fighting, obviously, and so you're going to get those kind of scenes every once in a while, but I think having a lot of that gets old. I like the whole thing with, like, Gorshe talking to Nisor and things like that.
Yeah.
Things like that where you get to see more character rather than what they
Vindictus
do
and Severus?
I didn't read that, but yeah, things like that.
Yeah, Vindictus is scared to death of Severus.
What are you saying, Lucas?
Insight and, like, behind-the-scenes moments is definitely, I think, one of the key factors. Mm-hmm. It gives you a sense of what's driving a character. And things that you know, what other people don't realize is going on, you're like, oh, who's doing this now? Oh, that's going to screw over, like, Haley's plan or so-and-so's plan. And that really adds a lot of depth to the whole storyline, in my opinion.
Well, speaking of adding depth, I think anytime little hints are given in the background, you know, a character's name that you know is going to become, an orchestra, when Strakov came about in one of the books, you know, like, oh, he's got to be the next guy. Stuff like that. Things that tie into the story, not necessarily the fights, you know. Things that maybe talk about... I don't know.
Well, you know, talking about the Crixian fluff in particular, you gotta think of it in the mindset that it's really Torek's point of view. If you think about it, it's the way he wants his guys to fight.
Even the warcasters are expendable to him.
Well, I'm just gonna say it's alien. It's not a human thought process. Mm-hmm. You got to think of it beyond those terms.
And that's why
it's supposed to be a completely different. That's why they fight so differently.
I give you
that's why things happen at a different.
But keep in mind that the book has to be written for Armin for human
mentality.
Well,
no, right.
And that's.
But I'm gonna put it out there. I think you could see a lot of the Legion book end up being like this, where there's a lot of subtlety and little things going on.
And that's why I love Asphyxius, because ever since we first knew him, we knew he jumped into a volcano to become a Lich Lord. Like, he wasn't like resurrected, you know. He wasn't recruited. He went in to go do it, so ever since then we've known that he has his own like what
agenda.
He wants
much
so he
like
knew
Tom
that
Hanks.
Much like Tom Hanks, absolutely.
He's and he's iron, so he's kind of got like an iron agenda kind of.
he does but he, you know, he just does what he wants, and you can. I just love the way he just manipulated things. I love at the end of the first piece when him and Denegro were talking, he just was so like he knew exactly what Denegro was thinking and just playing off it and just really railing Mouthrex was really awesome.
Well, I have two comments. One is actually thinking about it again. Tim, I think I'm going to disagree. I think the Legion book's going to be more forward, straightforward, because Everblight's getting all uppity and he wants to basically destroy Dwarven cities. Everblight has that for the little people. I don't know why, but
Everblight has more of a timeline. He can't play the long game like Torek can.
No, he can't. because he now that he's revealed himself, he is on a countdown. He's got all the dragons gathering to mess with him, and of course Torak wants to eat him, so he's in trouble. The other point I was going to make was I think that the one kind of problem though is a story. It's cool to see like background stuff behind the scenes, but to make a story interesting, there has to either be some sort of really nice reveal that's done in a very interesting way, or there has to be some sort of struggle taking place. And I hear a lot of times from Crix players that the whole story with them sitting under in the underground city, you know, wringing their hands together and kind of cackling. Okay, that was a big reveal that they have that underground city, but it was kind of lame.
Now, at the end of Legends, that was sweet, though, when they, like, descended underground and they're in Mortnaber's Jack Factory in the middle of Thornwood Forest, and you're just like, holy fuck, they're in the mainland.
But then now, they just sit there and cackle. I mean, yeah. If there had been, like, something to cap that off, to make it end on a higher note.
I'm saying that was how Legends ended, so, like, it wasn't – that was good, mm-hmm. but so that we thought more would happen, and I can see where people would think that it was a little disappointing. I want to say two things. One, even though it was – pretty blatantly obvious in the Crix book, I really like the way they've been moving along and connecting the stories in these books. It's pretty sweet. The way this ended obviously leads into the Merc book, and that's cool. I think they've done a really good job with that. I'm really excited to see how that progresses with Hordes. One thing we were talking about, like our favorite things in Fluff, I just love in Fluff when you can depict the battle in your mind. And like when they cast spells and stuff and you're like, oh, that's that. Like I remember I always remember Madrak when they're saying like their feet wouldn't like move and they wouldn't be knocked down by the force, whatever. Like you knew it was Surefoot that was doing that.
I like the part where like all the guys around him are getting shanked.
in the last book.
Metamorphosis. Yeah. And he's like, what the heck happened?
That is so hard to do. Like I've read the novels for the Earthdawn role-playing game just because I wanted some more setting information, and there were some really bad examples of that being done, and there are some in the War Machine Fluff that's been kind of iffy, but that's a big difficulty though, is actually trying to, because you're not really writing to mimic a game being played, you're just trying to kind of connect the dots and do it in an interesting way, and that's no small feat.
Now, this isn't the Earthdawn podcast, obviously, and you know a ton more about it than I do, but sure. From what little I've played with you with Earthdawn, they sort of, a lot of the game terms and whatnot are actually, you know, real-world vocabulary in the game. Like, people talk about their circle and things like that, right?
Yes.
Which is analogous to a level, kind of, you know? Uh-huh. So taking that into account when you're reading the book, is it because of that that makes it weird in the writing, or is it really just the writing style, or...?
It's just the fact, like, well, there's, okay... There's examples of like magic being worked, certain types of magic, mm-hmm. which are really cool. It's not in the rule book, but it's kind of a visual way to describe it. And some of it's interesting, and some of it feels really forced. It feels like it's not part of the story. It's not entertained. Doesn't quite connect the dots. It felt like something they put in just so that scene would match the rules.
Okay.
You know, on a similar related note, I'm a big Star Wars fan and read a lot of the books that come out, and they do multiple authors. So you can really see a disconnect when how one person describes one character versus another. Mm-hmm. And now that I think, you know, Simon helps Doug write a lot, they're pretty seamless, I think. Like, I can't really tell the difference of who's...
I wouldn't be surprised if they
go back. You know what I'm saying? And they probably collaborate
right.
to make it fit better. But
I think they stop, collaborate, and listen.
I want to listen to Lucas tell me what his favorite fluff piece is ever.
Ooh,
that's tough.
Favorite fluff piece ever.
Oh, or you can just lie to us.
I don't know. I actually say most of my favorite fluff pieces aren't from War Machine. They're probably from various bits in a like IK World guide. Like, I say, that's because I like history and just learning about weird things about the world. And that book's just soaked full of it.
Mm-hmm.
But I'd say anything to do with Alexia usually is pretty good in my opinion.
But, you know, I think it's funny that we have all these major characters and some of them have like very little written about them. Like, how much is written about Gorman?
He's a rouge alchemist.
It's basically just his escalation mm-hmm. entry, right?
Yeah,
pretty much.
But we think of him like this really deep, concentrated, you know, complicated character, and we know absolutely very little about
the question
him.
Apparently, under his mask, he's a dapper man.
He's a dapper Batman
of the Iron Kingdoms, right?
Yes, he is.
You know, it's going to be interesting in the Merc book because they're... I mean, majority of the Mercs are all characters.
Mm-hmm.
Well, a lot of them we've seen.
What are we going to see fluff-wise? I hope we see something for Gorman. I would love to see a fluff piece where Alexia shows up with the Risen.
I want more Piper.
Piper would be cool.
He's another good example.
Piping Risen.
They're doing like a little jig.
They're all like, it looks like a World of Warcraft like dance feature.
I think it's a big strength of the Iron Kingdom that there is enough material there, not just to make a game around, because they made the world first,
right,
which is key. And I mean that's what supports all this. We could say extraneous information from the tabletop standpoint of the role-playing information.
Mm-hmm.
It's a whole bunch of information that has no bearing on what takes place on the table, but allows us to create more imaginative scenes or just explore the world further.
Mm-hmm.
I think that if they leverage it right, that'll make their proprietary system that they're coming up with, a little tongue-tied, for the role-playing game really interesting. Because if they were to do it right, so you're using the mechanics, then every book that comes out is also a role-playing book, and mm-hmm. that could be really cool.
Yeah,
as long as it's not I would actually like a more role-playing game than a straight tabletop game. But that's gonna be a dangerous. I mean, if they're gonna follow and make it integral with the War Machine rules, it's got to have some sort of
strategic
combat. Sure.
I'm not saying you play your role-playing characters in a War Machine game.
I think they're gonna let you do that.
I think they'll go a very different route with it.
Well, I don't mean like official in tournaments, but I think that would actually be a pretty big draw to people.
Oh, I'm sure it would be, but I'm saying like, you use the same core mechanics of the dice rolling and the stat lines and stuff. So that way you can be like, oh, I want an ironclad to show up in this adventure.
Mm-hmm.
And you just flip to the Signar book or Prime or something. Mm-hmm. And oh, there it is. And you can just use those stats and run with it.
Even
with
something like double stats.
I think you would have a core book of its own where you character building and, you know, spells and things, you know, like a D&D core book would be kind of thing.
Right. Mm-hmm. Oh, for sure.
I'm just getting excited thinking about it.
I know. I've already said it.
Yeah.
I forget what episode it is, but we talked about your game that you ran that mm-hmm. was basically using the War Machine basic mechanics.
Yeah, tweaked it a little bit, added a few stats for non-combat things. And really, you know, anybody who's played RPGs a lot, you know that it's essentially a combat system with a little extra stuff on the side, because mm-hmm. you don't need rules to tell you how to roleplay.
And actually, we spent an episode of Fear of the Boot kind of talking about your game as well.
Right.
But that reminds me, that's another piece of news, and I'm just going to throw this in randomly. Fear of the Boot, episode 185, I will be on it.
Oh, again? Really?
Yep. It has nothing to do with wargaming, so you've been warned, but if you're a role player and enjoy that kind of conversation, you'll find me there.
Cool. Yeah, I've already said it that once it...
Oh,
sorry.
Oh, I cut you off. You jerk. Yeah, it's okay.
No, I'll cut both you off.
Oh.
Look at this guy.
Shut up.
What I was going to say is the one thing that I'm not overly worried about a game being too much hack and slash is Josh's rule system that he built was a freaking hack and slash game.
Yeah.
And we had like two or three combats over the course of 3 days because you don't need rules to roleplay.
Mm-hmm. No. And since they were tied into the War Machine rules, it was a very fast combat.
Uh-huh.
So you had plenty of time. Okay, well, there's an encounter. Let's get it. Well, not in a get it over with kind of sense, but you know, it's going to be quick. It's going to be fluid. It can be very characterful anyway. Your character, mm-hmm. you chose your skills and abilities to really build up your character, as did everybody, really.
Right.
So, but after the combats were done, you know, it was just RP. You didn't need the rules to do that.
Yeah, I've already decided that once the new system comes out, I'll run it for people because I love the world. I mean, mm-hmm.
I don't role play, but I'll play in that.
Oh, you're going to play in it. Trust me.
I'm going to go back to Fluff for a minute. I think that my favorite stuff, I like a lot of the action scenes.
Mm-hmm.
They are pretty cool. But I think that so far, my two coolest pieces, especially recently, have been Severius reading the book to Vlad, reading him a bedtime story, as it were, and Vindictus and Severius. Because it's just, there's so much going on there that you can sense tension even if there's not combat. And I find that very interesting.
So, Lucas, whenever you do roleplay, what kind of things do you do? Are you the game master or a player typically, or what kind of stories do you enjoy?
I generally prefer being a player. I recently ran the Witchfire Trilogy, the compiled version for a group of players, although we haven't quite gone through the third and final book yet. I don't know. I like a mix. I like combat. I generally play combat-oriented characters. However... Mm-hmm. That's because I'm not one of those people that can think of things to say on the fly very well. So
yeah.
If I'm with a DM that, like, I can make a character that could be like the fast talking type of guy, but if the DM's relying on me to be able to come up with a snap answer, I don't always have that. And so sometimes I'm like, well, that's why I have those skill points to represent my fast talking ability that I myself do not, you know, have.
That's one of the reasons I also agree that I like playing combat characters. Even though I enjoy role-playing, it's because I want to be able to roll the dice and do stuff when we're not role-playing. I don't want to be a guy who's all role-playing heavy and no combat skills, because then half the time I'm going to be kind of bored.
Yeah, you got to have that balance between the two.
We develop. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, my first and primary role-playing experience was the old West End Games Star Wars, the D6.
Oh, yeah.
Lots of fun with that. But we had a guy in our playing group who wanted to, he was pretty much like a jack of all trades, but because he diversified so much, mm-hmm. he couldn't do anything well. So it was, he was always the one we were saving, you know, mm-hmm. the bacon, saving his bacon out of the fire.
Was he a Gamorrean?
No.
Because you could save his bacon if that were the case.
That would be awesome.
Curious.
That reminds me of a rousing game of League of Legends I played the other night. Who plays League of Legends?
Never heard of it.
Never heard of it.
You guys know Dota from Warcraft 3? Heard of that?
No.
God, you guys are horrible.
I know all about Dota.
It's Dawn of the Apocalypse or something like that?
Or it's, what is it? I don't even know what Dota stands for. I've only called it Dota.
Is League of Legends a standalone game?
Yeah, it's like a standalone game made by the people who made that engine, and it's amazing. It's free. Check it out if you like computer games, especially. It runs kind of like Warcraft 3. Really exciting.
Z loves it.
Yeah, Z loves it. We play it. It's awesome.
Cool.
I had to give a shout out to League of Legends because I've been so addicted.
Think of it like World of Warcraft, only play heroes pretty much.
You only play heroes and then you don't control or build. You just have a hero.
So
you attack each other. And there's minions that come at each other. You have to destroy like a thing in the back of their base. It's really cool.
So one more little thing about the Crix fluff. I'm going to have to go pick Doug Seacat's brain on this one. Because in No Quarter, when they did the timeline, mm-hmm. it was a couple issues back. Low 20s, I think. 23, 24, something like that. And it was, you know, a timeline all the way up through like the end of Legends or right up to Legends. And the Crix one said that Lich Lord Thalassina was the one who brokered the alliance between the Cephalix, but now in the Crix book they say it was Asphyxius who did it.
Uh-oh.
So I want to know which, you know.
I want to know where the hell the Cephalix are.
Well, Thalassina probably just laid the groundwork. You know, she probably brokered it and signed the deal.
Like the Cephalix were in the fluff.
She probably did all the work, and Asphyxius just took the credit.
But there's no you
he's
can't,
like that.
Can you use Cephalix in any of the tiers?
Yeah, you have to have like two units.
That's right.
What do you think about that? That sounds fluffy, but two units of Cephalix? I don't know.
You get a lot of souls.
Guys, do you play much Cephalix? We don't see them a lot around St.
Louis. Souls from them.
I didn't in Mark 1. I played with the Overlords a lot because I like them, but I haven't had a lot of experience with them. I'm going to wait and see. My personal thing is, though, is I want to see if the Merc book has anything for the Cephalex to be used in any sort of Merc contract. I still highly doubt it, but they're like the only ally that can't be used by Mercs still. And I'm kind of sad about that.
I was just going to say, I'm guessing the next War Machine book, that's what's supposed to be next year, Gen Con. So we're talking, that'll be the first book that has all six factions in it.
Has it been announced?
I would just guess.
Do you really think it's that long away?
I think so.
Wait, when did you say?
Gen Con next year.
Oh, that's when I would assume.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or you know,
because you figure minions.
Yeah, but
the last
full
book
was actually War Machine, not Hordes.
Oh, I see what you mean.
Oh, so you think it could be a Hordes?
I think it'd be a Hordes book.
I'll just put it. I think it's the next big War Machine book. I was just assuming it would.
When you say War Machine book?
It was a Gen Con last year. Yeah, Metamorphosis was before that, right?
Yeah.
I think we'll get maybe a War Machine book again because we'll have just come off a long run
of Hordes,
getting a whole bunch of new stuff. Like probably way more.
Watch this double book.
No, it's not going to happen.
Drop it on you. Drop that knowledge.
One big thick book. It's like the new Warhammer Fantasy rule.
You know that's a good point,
dude. They did. It's huge. You saw the store? Yeah, I picked. I opened it out of the box. It was insane.
They did put the allies in the faction books, but they could in the Merc book
put them in there again.
Put another ally in.
They did that for Eris.
Yeah.
Oh, the partisan rule or whatever?
Because she was in Legends and in the Retribution book. Which I guess made sense. She needed to be in Legends.
Right.
I'm just saying.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
In theory, they could give everybody another ally. Maybe an ally solo.
That'd be cool.
Maybe we see an Idrian Hunter. Maybe we see another Cephalix guy.
A Kassai. Idrian.
A Kassai.
Idrian like Cav solo on a camel.
Knife thrower.
There you go. A knife thrower, sure. I mean, sniper with the knives.
Yeah.
Like maybe an 8-inch range, but with stealth and defense 15, some crazy stuff like that.
Anti-armor precision.
Yeah.
It's like a Widowmaker.
And then give her a
quick strike or something.
Well,
rapid shot.
Not anti-armor precision, because that's only
sniper,
melee.
Sure.
Sniper, and then gunfighter.
Oh, that'd be cool.
That'd be cool.
And he had two knives.
Sure.
That'd be cool. Need a little 2-point solo. And their weapon master.
That'd be three.
With okay.
Well, like the javelins are weapon master now. You'd probably have a low POW, I'm sure. I don't know, maybe.
Not if you have anatomical precision.
Well, you can take that away. I like the weapon master better. It's pretty cool. I mean, if the wild girls of
circle. The Girls Gone Circle.
Girls Gone Wild Circle Edition. Look at the bones growing out of our forehead.
Oh yeah,
that's weird.
Yeah. No, I love the Overlords. Back to the Overlords. I played them a lot in Mark One when they did crazy command shenanigans, but now they're just better Grey Lords.
Yeah, I don't want to talk about that.
Eyeless more sight. Sprays. Eyeless sight spray. That's awesome.
No, 4 points for 5 wounds.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
That's awesome, 15 too.
15 wounds.
Well, you know what I'm saying.
Grey Lords, 3 wounds, though.
How do you like that?
Why aren't they 5 points or 5 wounds? I have no idea.
We should ask Geist. He made them.
Because they're old men. That's why.
There you go.
But they lost. Oh, they just lost like all sorts of things. It's stupid.
You know what it is? It's a gimp mask.
I want to know what they look like.
Gives you the
like
extra
under
4
there.
Life.
What's up?
I want to know what they look like under their getup.
They're like those guys from Star Wars that when you open their mask, they just like, you know what I'm talking about?
No.
He fought, they fought him on.
Just in a movie?
It was in the animated series, the first one, when Anakin has to go and it gets like the tribal paint all over him and he loses his arm and he has like the mechanical arm and they call him like the ghost hand. And so he has to go and fight these guys and they're making, they're producing something.
They're like big, they make big brute thralls.
Sure. Yeah. They make essentially brute thralls. They steal people from there.
Right.
And they mutate them. I actually saw that episode.
Yep. And then they, the guys that he fights, like when he kills them or when like their little like mouthpiece mask is unscrewed, they're like gas inside.
So it's like the guy from Hellboy 2.
Yes. I was about to say the same thing.
But they die. The guy in Hellboy 2 can be gas. They just are inside.
He's very gassy, man.
Ate a lot of cabbage.
They do call him Asphyxius.
Mm-hmm.
My friend thinks that's the dumbest thing that his name is Asphyxius. I'm not sure if
I think Gatsby's the dumbest thing ever.
Well, we've got a workhouse named Fiora, which wasn't that a little like a sports car little dude? No, it's a Fiero.
Yeah, that too.
The Fiero was close.
She's going to be the next Grand Scrutator. I'm waiting for it. Triple epic Fiora.
She becomes Grand Scrutator. Denegra becomes the Lich Lord to take Morbus's place. And all sorts of crazy
stuff.
And the old witch becomes young.
Out of life.
But she has to lose her powers to become young again.
No. But she becomes a melee, like, awesome badass.
I thought you were about to say she becomes a man.
She grabs, she says, Fenris, you can't upstage me. I'm going to take 3 fell blades.
She takes off one of her clawed hands, and she's got a sword and the clawed hand.
No, she replaces each claw with a fell blade.
She's got 10.
Fell fingers.
All right, so you know Doug had put up his insider post, right? And I'm pretty sure this was on his insider post because he had also had a lot of lengthy board posts as well. But he mentioned in his insider that they needed to have, or in retrospect, they should have upped the populations of all the countries because everybody's dying.
Yeah.
Yeah, that you know, Mark, one of our locals, Mark and I would joke because we'd read the World Guide and it'd be like, shouldn't all the Protectorate people be dead because of all the zealots that die in every game?
That's a good point. They have to go somewhere.
The gestation period is only 1 week in the
Arcane.
We always joke that the best strategy Signar could have done would be to actually surrender and let Kador take over all their lands, because then they'd be spread so thin. Disband every army, send them all home, and then they'd be spread thin, defending the super huge country that would be there.
They'd only have like 5 guys in a city.
Yeah, I mean, better way to?
I mean, Signar plus Kador is pretty huge. It's like if Russia took over China.
Would it be Sidor?
It'd be Kador.
Cogdor?
Cognar.
Trogdor.
Trogdor.
The Burninator.
That's if they take over the Protectorate and add that to it.
And only if they have consummate Vs.
So, we're going to do a list.
We have a list.
Now, wow, look at that. Executive decision.
See, I did the hand smack in the back of my hand. Hear that? That's my hand laying it down. We're going
to
do a list.
Put it to your girlfriend.
Geist, I hear you have a list that's undefeated.
Well, yeah.
I challenge you.
It's been defeated once, and that was only because we were playing Color Guard, and I captured the flags and didn't want to have to defend the table, so I let my caster die, which was kind of lame. But other than that, it's undefeated.
Well, all the games I've lost, I've just let my opponent win, so I'm undefeated too.
when you purposely walk out of combat with Epic Denegra and put yourself right in front of Morgul, you're going to die.
When you purposely run Epic Kane and then you land a centimeter out of the kill box, is that like what that's like?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's what I did at the Mangle Metal.
Oh, did you really?
35 points.
Oh, man.
It sucked. I was so dumb.
All right.
Go ahead.
Okay, so it's a 35-point list. No tiers or anything because they didn't exist when I made the list. It's Warcaster's Wraith Witch Denegra, and she has a Death Ripper, a Defiler, Seether and a Scarlock. For units, she has 10 Bane Thralls with Bane Thrall Officer and Standard Bearer, 10 Mechana Thralls, Necrosurgeon and Stitch Thralls, a Necrotech, and a Warwitch Siren. So where would you like me to start with this? I mean,
that's a lot of meat and ghost meat.
It is.
With Wraithwitch Negra, I think really what you have is a caster that can mess with your enemy, but also kind of rips out the rules on any sort of piece of terrain or unit. It makes it really hard for a caster to actually keep themselves safe from you unless they surround themselves with troops, which most people don't do when they're playing Crix because they expect you to sling spells at them. But yeah, so generally my tactic is to try and present the opponents with more threats than they can handle at once and figure out what they're most afraid of. Like, if they're most afraid of the Bane Thralls, I'll feed them the Bane Thralls so that they present an opening for me to be able to kind of spearhead a jack in there like the Seether and go straight for their caster using my spells to bypass their models and free strikes. So it's pretty much an assassination list, not through spells, but through one of the various heavy hitters.
Yeah.
But even so, her spell supports so well. I mean, I love how she has both Marked for Death and Curse of Shadows.
Yeah.
Is that correct? I believe so.
Mark them.
I'll just open her up here. I should have actually brought the cards out with me.
I hate Marked for Death.
It's so awesome.
Curse of Shadows.
Yeah, so you can. So if they're high defense, you say -2 defense, high armor, -2 armor. Hopefully they don't have both, because you can't do both.
But like Vlad.
Yeah, she has Curse of Shadows, Ghost Walk, Hellmouth, Marked for Death, Pursuit, and Venom. Yeah, Marked for Death has been really useful. One of my games, I charged in on a Titan, finished it off with some Mechana Thralls, and Arcuari were on the other side of a forest, and he thought they were totally safe. And so I Marked for Death one, and suddenly my Mechana Thralls are charging back through the forest to take them out. And he's like, that was totally unexpected. People, I think, really haven't come to terms with her new spell list. In Mark 1, she was a little more tricky to use, but she's really become a great caster in Mark 2, I think.
I think in Mark 1, especially toward the end of Mark 1, a lot of people just saw her as the whole command shenanigans thing to take over with the Dark Seduction and all that. But now she's still as deadly, just a little different.
I mean, she's got some fantastic infantry clearing. I mean, she also has great heavy hitters, but I mean, between her Venoms, Hellmouth, and the Venoms from the Siren, I mean, that's just an extra spray, which is causing corrosion. If you bring an infantry swarm and have them positioned poorly, she can take them out. Because with like 2 or 3 Arcanauts, she can set them up on either side and shoot one spell through each plus the Siren, which is great. But then again, if you've got some jacks, Bane Thralls eat themselves some jacks.
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
even Mechana Thrall can eat some jacks with Curse of Shadows on
absolutely.
Them.
Yeah.
Well, not just
17.
That, but yeah. I mean, even Lights. Every time I like show someone Mechana Thrall, I'm like, why don't you bring Mechana Thralls? Like, oh, they're not that good. And they're like, wait, they have POW 11? Like, just regular fists. They have 2 attacks with POW 11, which is just so good.
Their problem is their map, but if you can give them anything
to help
them.
What are they, 5?
Yeah. If you can give them anything that helps them
mark
that.
Or death,
yeah,
one.
Anything.
And
or both.
Sure.
They're only 3/5.
That's so stupid.
That's so stupid.
They're so cheap.
At least there wasn't a tiered list that made them cheaper.
Oh, man, 2/4.
Lucas, what do you think about her maneuvering capabilities? I mean, her feet let you move on as you want on one turn. Marked for Death lets you see things that you can't. Well, you've talked about Marked for Death.
Yeah.
But like Pursuit, things like that. I mean, do you think she has a lot of in the way of maneuvering?
She does. Like I said, the Web of Shadows really helps set up. Like, I use it defensively. A couple games I played, people, I popped my feet, caught most of their army, and they're like, oh, you used that way too soon. Like, You know, I have -3 defense. Why aren't you attacking my models? And I'm like, well, I don't have to. I've moved all my models up. And your turn, you can't move. And the next turn, I've charged most of my models past your essential units. And I'm on your caster. So I've never really used it on the attack turn.
Mm-hmm.
Pursuit is really good for keeping her safe. Another game I recently had against Madrak. He came in for the assassination on her really early in the game, like turn 2. And he failed to kill her by 3 points, and so she threw a pursuit on him and used weapon called Eclipse, and Dark banished him across the table from his army.
Mm-hmm.
It was rather interesting seeing Madrak basically in my deployment zone while his army was still in his.
I love Dark Banishment.
Oh, that really messed with his trolls for a while. Not being able to read Fury off of things. But, you know, every time he'd move or get close to her, she would just pursuit away and get closer to other models that she could, you know, not really be worried by, because it's like, oh, I'm incorporeal this turn, so most of the troll army can't hurt me.
Yep.
Ghost Walk, of course.
Stone.
Yeah, don't get too close to the stone.
Yeah.
And it can run, and it can pop. Pretty much, it can find you.
Ghost Walk, of course, pretty standard, very, very, very useful for getting through terrain. Pretty much, like I said, it kind of makes it so that you don't have to worry. Like, oh, there's a forest there and my mechanthralls need to get through it. Ah, whatever. I think the Curse of Shadows, to being able to advance through other models, is the largest spell on her list, though. Like, that's the one that seals the deal for me.
That's pretty awesome.
Like you said, if they rush you, you can feat Curse of Shadows them and then move your front line through their front line, and you're right there for the kill next turn.
Yeah.
I have a question. Did you only have one Jack in the list? Am I right?
No, I had, well, heavy.
One heavy.
Okay, I had a Defiler, a Death Ripper, and a Cedar, because Cedars are probably my favorite Jack right now.
They're so good.
They seem to be a wildly favorite Crix Jack right now.
I don't like them.
I wish people locally would play the Crab Jacks more.
Leviathan is so good. Oh my god, Leviathan's so good. I don't even get it.
I think that the Harrow are solid too. The Harrow Shot,
he can boost.
You have to give Ghost Shot credit.
Mm-hmm. Here's the thing too, you can get in there and just wreck in like so many units, because you just kill, get the soul, and then you just continue that, you know. It's just, and their armor is really solid too. Mm-hmm. I mean, I like them, but I understand the Seether is obviously really efficient. Mm-hmm. You don't really have to take care of him, which is nice for Crix.
Yeah, having a free focus definitely makes him a good model for killing the caster. I do like the Crabjacks as well. I haven't had a lot of chances to get him play the last 2 months. I've been working every Saturday, which kind of puts a dampener on going out and gaming.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Well, do you like the fact that the in this list of nightmares just a better melee punch? Because you know, if you take a Crabjack instead, you don't have a melee beat stick jack in a list like this.
But you have Bane Thralls and
you do have Bane Thralls and Mechanithralls if they can land their hits.
Well, it depends. Like the Seether's good, but having a Crabjack, they are definitely more ranged, except for the Harrower. However, the Harrower to me has always been more of like a troop clearing model, and there's other casters that he can do that better with.
Right.
He really needs to have a way to, I guess she can lower defense, but I just find that he didn't really fit what I needed. Like, the rest of my army wasn't really ranged, so having a model that for most part wants to stand back, I didn't find that useful.
Yeah, it's absolutely kind of a problem I run into sometimes playing the Redeemer. If I decide to take Daughters as well, you're going to be throwing AoEs at your own stuff. And at some point, you're going to basically minimize the angles that you have to attack anyway. And if all his stuff is rushing up like as fast as it can, it's basically going to minimize the time that the AoE gets its full usage. That's not going to say it's not useful later game, but you basically start taking avenues away from yourself, whereas something like the Seether is going to just get in there and start ripping stuff up.
So, Dave, can you explain to me what someone looks like after they rushing up?
After they rushing up,
yeah,
they look like Sorsha.
Okay, because you said they were rushing up.
Big fluffy mustache.
That was actually RUSHIN Russian, not Russian, not Russian as in like the.
It was like the game Russian Attack. It was a play on words because you're rushing and attacking, but it's Russian Attack. Oh,
except for it's very against the principles of the Russian army, where they were generally trying to.
No, you were attacking them.
Starve.
It's like you're just sitting there and saying, "Come on, come into our cold home."
Do you know how many people destroy I have?
Our crops and poison our wells?
Do you know how many of them we are? They have more people than they do bullets. Bring it.
That the whole Russian bullets thing makes me think of, any of you ever seen Enemy at the Gates?
Yes.
Yeah, so that is a movie that actually strikes me a lot as what could very easily be an Iron Kingdom's movie of like Widowmakers versus like some Russian riflemen or Kadoran Winterguard riflemen.
Yeah, but with Joe, the Widowmakers would be dead.
Yeah.
I love the start of it. You know, the main character, they give the guy next to him a rifle and he reaches his hand out for one and they just give him a clip of bullets. When he dies, you get his rifle. Until then, sorry.
I like the very beginning when he's a boy hunting and he puts the snow in his mouth so the steam don't come up and the wolf can't see him. I was like, that is really cool.
I didn't know that. That's really cool.
So, Lucas, with you at the helm, this list is relatively undefeated, you said. I'm wondering, what was the coolest win for you, or what spectacular things happened with this list?
Well, I mean, as I said, sending Magic across the table was definitely one of the highlights. Just it's, I don't know, like it's hard to say. Like at PAX, or not PAX, at the Privateer Press Invitational, I ran it, but I was using one of the alternate models, Jezario, which is what if Haley was captured by Krix. And her spell list was very similar. However, it's, I think my favorite moments are just the look of surprise on your opponent's face when they think they've sealed the deal. Like, I've fed them my army, they've killed almost everything, and they're looking at you and they're like, oh, all you have is, like, you know, a Seether and a Bonejack and a Negra, and their caster's standing there behind the enemy line, and suddenly you're making it so your Seether can run through that unit of troops blocking them, and he just charges right through and tears some face. That's my favorite part. Is I like, what I like about Krix as a whole is the sort of pulling something out of the out of nowhere, and people are just like, how did that happen? Like, and that's what Krix does best, in my opinion, is playing outside the box.
Yeah, to me, that's kind of the essence of Krix. It's doing the crazy things that get you killed.
The surprise nom-nom factor.
There you go.
I have a question. Was on expected value, was Madrak expected to kill you? Was it a whiff, or was it a... was he fell called?
I can't recall if he's fell called. He should have killed me. The problem that he ran into on the way in is he was relying, like, he, I think he'd even used his feet, but he was relying on chaining through my...
With blood tokens.
Yeah, he was relying on chaining through my Bane Knights.
You can't get blood tokens.
My Bane Thralls. Yeah, but he wanted to kill, move, get to the Negra. And tough on the Bane Thralls kind of stopped that, because by the time he got to me, he only had, like, 2 fury, I think.
Sure.
But even with that, like, I'm not hard to kill once you hit me. Her defense is pretty good. Her armor is low. I had no focus on her.
So you're plus one at least on the roll.
Yeah.
Yeah, and he, like I said, he managed to get me down to 2 health. So I, by all rights, should have been dead. And because, as you guys say down there, not a lot of people are playing Hordes right now because of the paper, I'm not up to speed on them, and so I was flabbergasted. The fact that I managed to not only survive that, but then pretty much start picking apart his army was...
Yeah, from there, amazing. I mean, he gave it all he could, you know?
Yeah, exactly, and I think he expected to have more of a chance to come back and attack her, not realizing I was going to teleport him 11 inches across the table.
I have a question. So he's in melee with the Negra.
Mm-hmm.
He obviously has spent all his fury trying to kill you.
Yeah.
And you didn't have anything around that you thought you could kill Madrak with?
Oh, I could have killed him, but once again, we were playing Color Guard, so the whole objective is capturing flags. If I killed him, he would have kept 3 flags as a defender, and I would have gotten nothing. So,
do you not lose?
No. No, in Color Guard, it's not about win-loss, or at least the version of it we were using. It's all about the number of flags you either capture or defend.
I've never played Color Guard, and I'm not aware of this.
It's kind of like the what's the word I'm looking for? The Legends type format, the release format, sure, where you hold a table.
Yeah, like instead of if you win, you now become the defender on the table. You suffer attrition for your units, which is why the one game I threw my caster away, because I was like, oh well, I have an attacking army. Why do I want to sit on this table and defend? Like, I'm gonna have a harder game defending than I am just going out and killing their caster. So. So yeah, that's why I didn't kill him. I mean, my Seether was right there. My unit of Bane Knights Bane Thralls, why do I keep saying that? Was right there. So yeah, by all rights, I could have had him, but I would have effectively lost.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and you don't want to do that.
Which is why I like scenarios, because it's not all about just killing the caster.
Yeah, but I mean, I agree. I like scenarios too, because they just give you alternate ways to win. Some armies are better at other things, and it just lets you build towards a certain way.
Variety is one of the things that keep us playing this game. Because it was just caster kill over and over again, it would get boring.
I do like it when caster kill wins you the game, though.
Sure. I like it to be an aspect,
like a moron.
But having to play like around a scenario.
He's commando rolling. Haven't you seen this? Fine, he'll go sideways.
Having to play around a scenario, or at least keep it in mind, does make the game different enough as opposed to just, you know, running straight down the table.
I think maybe that's my problem. I can't walk and chew gum at the same time. So if I have to think about assassination and a scenario, that's like an auto.
That's why you
for me.
Play your Kaya rush down their throatless.
Exactly. I don't care about your scenario.
You can't walk and chew gum.
I crawl onto it.
You're just like, I chew
a couple times and I stop. Oh, you know what? If we have a couple minutes, I forgot that I had an email a while back and I just responded to him the other day. Jeremy is one of our listeners.
Okay.
And it's actually Crick's. Again, so we have like tons of Crick's.
Well, the book just
you know,
came out.
The same thing happened with Kador. Yeah, a lot of questions from the Kador book.
But not Protectorate.
Not Protectorate.
It's because they suck.
No, it's because our Protectorate representation is very poor.
It's because everyone's playing with that damn book.
Protectorate is a little bit of an easy button. They light things on fire and a story, you know.
And they have a big giant book.
That's fine because it's like I love people's just opinion of things because on one hand, sure, Protectorate could be easy button, but on the other hand, it's like the. Very hard to do and very orders of operations and
they are
and making sure you're playing your thing right. But you're right. I think on the same token, they could be very easy button. I mean, pop and drop is probably as simple as it gets, but you know, you got.
I played Resnick in hardcore.
Yeah.
That was a lot of fun. Actually,
it looked like a lot of fun.
Okay. I told you he was going to be fun.
What's that?
I'm going to be getting a lot of hate mail on the forums, I think.
Oh, that's okay.
Give him a lot of hate mail, everyone.
Yes.
If you don't know him, just send it to him.
Sure. Or send it to us. We'll forward it on.
All right, so I just finally put out the email here. It was about Crix, and the gist of it was Jeremy was wondering, what do you do whenever you're facing your same faction? Do you think there are, like your strategies change when you play the same faction that you have? What do you think about faction-on-faction games? I mean, in Steamroller, they're really not supposed to occur if you can get away with it, but it happens. And do you think the game suffers because of that, or what are your thoughts?
It depends on the faction.
Because
like Trolls on Trolls is like the worst game of all time. It just takes forever.
Well, and it depends on a lot of it depends on what Warlock or Warcaster each person's
when
playing.
When every warrior model on the table is tough, that is not fun.
I love it because that means I'm playing Protector against Protectorate, and there's a good chance they have Kreos and I've got the book, so they have the feet.
Faction on faction, I say, is a good chance to see in a way how players compare, because you should both know your own models inside and out, and it's your own faction, so you should be able to look across the table and see. You're like, okay, I'm expecting this sort of trick or that to come out of the woodworks and see what's going to go on. So I think it really gives a chance for people to think outside the box and come up with new strategies. Like Crix on Crix, unless you're playing maybe a Scarlist or they're playing Scarlist, like you can't rely on soul tokens all of a sudden. So if your whole shtick was, I kill stuff, I gather souls, well, that doesn't work now. So how does your army work if it's not getting that extra focus or, you know, it can't fear people away?
I think it's a good opportunity to learn new tricks for your faction.
Yeah, I find myself...
Or what to defend against.
When I'm playing like Kador versus Kador, I'm willing to try more radical. You know, I'm willing to go outside the box even more and just be like, well, what can I... Because in my mind, it's almost a psychological thing. If I can do something completely different and throw that person off their game, I might be able to somehow pull a win out.
Or lull them into think that you did something dumb and therefore are a bad player.
Right.
Yeah.
And you know, I've found that has worked wonders when I play like Epic Sorsha or the Old Witch. You know, the Old Witch is definitely a more tricksy caster than, you know, a Butcher or a Vlad. And when I go up against the same faction, I tend to try to do stuff with her that I wouldn't necessarily do against other people because it might put her in a bad position or might, you know,
I think it's interesting. And I think that, you know, I guess this is probably too general of a statement, but I feel like a lot of times you kind of have to play Crix a little bit different than other factions. I mean, if you... range and Signar is a big deal, but like if you're playing Protectorate or Kador, Protectorate, there is some similarity there on how you have to face them. There's some similarity between Signar and Retribution. And I know I'm making generalizations. I'm not trying to state all-encompassing, but it feels like, especially if you're doing some sort of spell slinging Crix, they're kind of like their own thing in some regards. And I don't know, that would mean like the Crix on Crix game for the most part would be a kind of new experience for the Crix player, or something that they're not necessarily used to. And I think that could be really interesting. I mean, because now you've got to defend against those Arknodes running around 14 inches and throwing Venoms all over you.
Yeah, most of the time I've happened to play a Crix on Crix game, it was in a tournament, and we both happened to have Denegra. So Denegra on Denegra was just distilled, you know, that distilled down to, holy shit, this is stupid.
So by turn three, there were just two casters left.
Yeah, usually, well... I was playing against Vader, for example, the first time that I can think of this happening. And first thing he did was Crippling Grasp my Bile Thralls. I'm like, oh shit, no purging, no nothing. I said, oh, I had Admonius, so I'll give you a Crippling Grasp. And then I ended up trying to Crippling Grasp his Biles. It was kind of weird. It was sort of the same thing back and forth. But yeah, so really everything was sort of neutralized. And in the end, it really was just, you know, Denegra trying to sling spells at the other Denegra and whatnot. So it's a little boring in some cases, but sometimes you pull out really interesting things.
I think if you bring regular Asphyxius to the table, I think some of your strongest caster Cricks matchup, because he just such a toolbox, and he can really handle anything and never requires your other army to bring anything. Plus, his feet has a good chance of killing like Bile Thralls and Mechanthralls.
Well, it's only going to kill living models, I think.
What? Yeah, living enemy models.
But it'll kill Satixis and crap.
Yeah. Oh, really? I did not. Well, yeah, Satixis is actually huge. Yeah,
but you're absolutely right, because he's sort of generic in the sense that he's just going to kill you with melee attacks and maybe some spells.
And if you're fighting a high armor Crix caster, you're going to be able to hit him.
Easily.
You can hit him with Hellfires and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. Or if a low one with like Stealthy of a Denegra, you can make it so that the
Breath of Corruption.
The Breath of Corruption doesn't come off.
Yeah.
Unless you're playing Vithra. Is he immune to corrosion?
I don't remember. I don't think he is, but maybe he is.
Check it out. We got it right here.
Well, I think, on the Protectored standpoint, Protectored on Protectored is, in some ways, the Protectored's worst matchup.
You're immune to a lot of your own stuff.
For the Defender, I guess. Because you've got, like, oh, no spells, no shooty on your jacks, but you're going to hit him in the face anyway with your own infused jacks. You've got no knockdown, so they can't, if they've got Kreos feed on you. Now, I think that two Epic Fuero players would be a very funny game, because fire would be all over the place, never go out, and the first person to feed is going to get like 32 fire tokens and then kill something.
I think that when you dip into hordes, I've seen one that I feel like two, and it's funny because they're kind of similar in a way, from War Machine and hordes. I feel like Legion on Legion and Kotor on Kotor matches generally just go and they end fast and they just.
There's so much
other.
Death on the table.
There's just so much death. They come so fast, both armies. Generally, you just kill stuff, and that's just how it is.
Trolls would be the same way if it wasn't for tough.
Yeah, if it wasn't for tough and just high armor. I mean, yeah, they can hit really hard, but generally, their beasts hit hard, but, I mean, barring their heavy beasts, maybe champions, you can buff up Creel Warriors pretty crazy, but, you know, Creel Warriors hitting armor 20 beasts or armor 20 or more beasts isn't really going to do a lot, so it's just going to be a slog. I've done it too many times. Same with Scorn, actually. Scorn I've seen drag out a lot. But I think that Scorn in Hordes, in my opinion, depends the most on the caster matchup. That's my opinion, because I think their casters are very different, in my opinion. I don't think they have a lot of similarities between the casters.
Josh, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think Circle's going to go one of two ways. It's going to be a slow game of positioning and setting up a huge strike, or somebody's going to have a fantastic assassination run and a maneuverability trick, and they're going to pull it off early, and the game's going to end.
My guess is more often than not, it'll be the second, because nowadays, especially that we have really fast warp wolves and the Stalker and whatnot, our reach has gone so far down the table, I think you're going to see a lot of assassinations come earlier.
How many Stalkers did you pick up?
I don't own any now, but I'll get at least one, maybe two, but probably just one.
Maybe two.
Cool.
Ikai would want to.
Anything can happen.
Tim, what do you think about, like, Signar and Signar?
Ugh. As heavy range as they play, I think it can make for a dull game.
It can.
It's going to come down to it's going to come down to force composition, I think, for Signar, because if you're playing, you know, say I'm playing Epic Nemo and I have two heavies and a couple lights and then some versus, you know, somebody who's got a bunch of lights and maybe not a lot of heavies, you take out their heavy, you're going to have an advantage just for having a big beater versus two big beaters. Versus
very much like a chess match.
Yeah.
There's very much a paper, rock, scissors aspect, even within the factions.
Oh, like, yeah.
Just for example, Epic Striker versus Haley.
I would say that, I would agree with Tim, though. The Signar, I mean, they definitely have very self-sufficient units. Mm-hmm. And while they do have good buff spells, I think that they do pretty well. I think that there's something that I've seen from Signar recently that I think might have been a change. Everyone's always talking about this ranged. I feel like a lot of Signar players recently have been playing a lot of Denial, and I feel like Signar has a lot of it just through Arcane Shield or, you know, Deceleration, all the Haley stuff, of course. Just even if it just comes down to throwing a lot of high armor on the table, which I've seen Signar do a lot recently, whether it be Darius or E-Nemo or E-Striker, it's I feel like Denial's pretty key and I do agree with Tim. Force composition will definitely bring it down to a boil. You know, if you end up bringing, you know, like Z's core of his hardcore list, you know, Hammersmith, Stormclad, Old Rowdy, I mean, that's going to be a lot for some Signar armies to chew through.
I think that Retribution kind of lines up with that pretty similarly.
Yeah. Probably.
I'm going to take a cop-out answer, and I say you can't really answer this question from the Merc standpoint because it's not really one Merc. They're different.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not really like there's one guiding principle. I mean, they can take a lot of the same models, but...
But no list... You very rarely ever see a list look the same. Even within, like, say, the Seer Forge.
Well, you could
see, don't really look this... I mean, yeah.
I would say especially in Mark II. Like, in Mark I, I brought very, very similar armies. I usually had the core of the Pressgangers with their shenanigans and some of the great solos, and then a certain couple Jacks. And I would, you know, throw Gorton in there, or I'd throw... Epic Magnus in there, and it'd be the same kind of army.
Well, you, Gorton, you had to do different jacks, but yeah.
Well, yeah, but I mean,
right.
I would have the same majority of my army would be the same. And but now I feel like it's definitely a little more separated.
Lucas, do you have a lot of variety in terms of factions that people have up there? I'm wondering how often these same faction matchups happen.
Well, we have about 4 stores now that carry the machine.
Nice.
They're all spread out pretty evenly, and just recently now we have about. We have 4 Pressgangers now, so that's taking a load off of me.
That's awesome, man.
I'd say there's a pretty decent spread. Like when I was first playing, I'd say we had definitely more Kricks and a decent amount of Kador. However, really, I find it depends on who's coming out and when and where you're playing. Like some people can't make Saturdays, so if you go to a Saturday event, you could easily have 1 week more Kricks players and the next week more Menoth players. But overall, I'd say it's pretty equal in the spread of players. Like, I never, when I go out, feel like it's like, oh, I'm always playing Kador, or I'm always playing Everblade, or I'm always playing this. Everyone seems to have their preferences, and luckily there's a lot of diversity here.
Yeah, it's funny because I feel like we have a lot of diversity too, but we're like... It seems like we always bring similar stuff. Like I remember two leagues ago, someone was like, God, all I'm facing is trolls. Because there were like 4 of us who decided to all bust out our trolls at the same time. And then like I remember in Mark I, it was Legion. And there was just like Legion. So many Legion players. And they all played other factions, but they all decided to play Legion at the same time. It was very weird.
You're welcome.
Well, yeah, one thing that people do up here is because you don't know who's going to be coming out when or where, we have a Vancouver Gamers Forum right now that's run by Zach from Tabletop Gaming News. And so people will usually be like, you know, Thursday nights is game night at such and such store. So they'll post and be like, hey, I'm coming out. I'm looking for games. I'm going to be bringing down my, you know, my mercs, or I'm going to be bringing down my trolls. And then so that way, if people like me who have been playing the game forever and have multiple factions are looking at that, I might go, oh, there's already a bunch of people bringing Kricks down. Well, maybe I'll grab my Kador or I'll bring my Signar down and give that a whirl.
Absolutely. I mean, having community forums is really good and it really strengthens the community. Absolutely. We are obviously the benefactor of a really great one in GameStLouis.com.
If you've got anybody in the Vancouver area who's not a member of your community and is looking to join up, what's the URL of your forums they can go to?
Let me just pull that up since I don't have it open right now. But I believe it's just VancouverGamers.com.
VancouverGamers.com.
Okay. Yeah. Well, we put in our show notes too.
Yeah.
Link to that.
It's Vancouver Gamers. Talking though about forums, you guys do have a really great one to the point where I actually end up signing up for it because you have a really good trades area.
We do. Yeah.
The one thing I was talking about with Pressgangers along the West Coast is out here, like community wise, I'm always hearing about things on the East Coast that are happening, big events, what's going on where. Maybe it's because all the podcasts are there and they're not here. But a lot of communities out here I've noticed don't have a central forum. And so one thing that a couple of us were talking about is starting like a West Coast War Machine forum to try and get more people on this side of the coast, talking about the games and getting bigger events and getting people to drive a distance to events. Cause no one does that out here. Like, you know, I drove down to Seattle for an event last December and I had a blast, but I hear about it all time back east. People being like, oh, I drove 2 or 3 hours to go to this event. It was awesome.
Go ahead.
No, you go.
I was just going to say, it's a little different. Like, especially I know, cause I lived in New York and I was a you know, party to that. And we're always talking about, like, okay, who's driving, you know, here and here. And every single place is 2 or 3 hours away. It just depends on which way you're going to point your, you know, your place on the map. You know, when you're in a pretty central location like New England, you know, they just had the team tournament up there, and it, that obviously was a really great success for them. Norbert was talking about it and saying it was awesome. And you know, I feel like we might have a similar kind of thing down here. I know we're definitely getting a little more camaraderie. Ours are probably about a 5 hour drive, as the Midwest growth is a little bit longer, but you know, 5 hours in most directions from St. Louis is somewhere that has a War Machine community.
It doesn't take much to get that whole community thing going along the West Coast. Cause like, look at what we have right now in St. Louis. We've got guys down in, we had guys down in Rolla, but that community's kind of gone away a little bit. But, you know, out in Springfield, out in Columbia, out in KC, we've met these guys, you know, one or two times. We've really gotten along well, and now all of a sudden people are traveling even more. Even Springfield, Cape Girardeau, both Springfields actually.
Yeah, I was just going to say Springfield, Illinois, so we're starting to get people coming in.
All it takes is a couple good events where people start hanging out and just enjoying each other's company and the kind of the social aspect of it, to just build that kind of spider web of networking between the communities.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to challenge everyone who's listening to this podcast right now, find a place that is 3 hours, or look around your area 3 hours in each direction. If there's a place, you should contact that press ganger.
Pull out a map, throw a dart into the United States section where it lands. You got to drive there for a game.
Fuck, I'm in New Mexico.
We just had – I'm sorry, go ahead, Lucas.
I was going to say, actually, on that note, to try and get people to – be more familiar with going to other events. I've been trying to promote up here a tournament I'm running in July for the PAX Masters. There's sort of a number of, sort of like you guys have out east, that you guys are having some qualifiers right now, I believe, is it for War Machine Weekend or something?
That's correct. Yeah, War Machine Weekend invitation.
Yeah, at PAX, there's always the Masters tournament out here, and to be in it, you either have to have won it the previous year or been one of like the 15 stores that runs a qualifier. And so we can put the page for that in the show notes. But there's about 15 events. I'm doing one in Vancouver on July 17th, which is the day after my birthday. And so I'm hoping that we can get some people up from the States. I haven't had much contact from them, but we'll see. Maybe if the events before mine people don't win, maybe they'll look at coming up and trying their hand.
Now, that's cool. Well, do they confiscate War Machine miniatures when you go across the border?
Do
you have to declare them?
If you're driving, it's not an issue. Occasionally, you get funny looks. Like when I went down to Seattle, I took the train, and I told them, like, when it was going through the scanner, I'm like, okay, this is going to show up really weird. It's a bunch of metal figures. And still, after it went through, the guy calls me over. He's like, what's this? I'm like, I just told you they're the lead miniatures. If you'd like, I could open it up and show you. He's like, his eyes just glaze over. He's like, nope, that's okay.
Actually, the 1 year I went to Gen Con before it moved, it was like Gen Con 2000, maybe 99. I was coming back and I had bought some miniatures there, and they scanned my bag, and the lady just like kind of said, more little metal men on through.
They're coming out of Gen Con.
They Gen Con's hilarious. Yeah. Last time, you know, I was in New York, and you know, they have really strict, you know, things, and I was like, oh, there's a homicidal maniac in my bag. No,
I hope not.
Was that bad?
That's when they got out the plastic glove and
they're like,
turn your head and call.
You got the treatment. That sounds like fun, though. Now, this isn't the first one of those invitations you guys have done out there, right?
Smedley's the guy that's in charge of it. It's been going on for a couple of years now. I've never really made it down to PAX. My wife really wants to go, so maybe we'll see if we can swing it this year. You know, there's lots of people I know down there that I could crash with. But yeah, no, he's died for a while. Apparently, they almost didn't get to do it this year, just due to funding and issues like that. But they've managed to work it all out. But it's a growing thing. Like I'd say, of our events on the West Coast, PAX is really like the one. There's not like, especially here in Vancouver, I can't speak for Seattle. Convention space is expensive, like really, really expensive.
Sure.
Like a small hall that holds 32 people. Which isn't bad, but that could run you $400 or $500 a day.
Wow.
Now, in just Vancouver, getting 32 people out to an event would be hard. I'd need to draw from a Seattle or Washington crowd to get that. And at this point, because there's not that intercommunication at stores, you don't really see those large events like you do back east.
Yeah. Well, I think that both like War Machine Week, and I just mentioned this, and DICON have been a very big benefit of building the networking communities. And
yeah, absolutely. Just, every year we just add on a new community. It's really, it's,
if you can just
really
find
fun.
One or two nearby communities to just kind of start hanging out with, it's just get the ball rolling. It'd be
snowball.
Awesome.
Snowball.
And we've also tried to help with that. Like, as we said, driving, you know, we'll go down to Springfield for this event or Columbia for this event, or, you know, and then we try to get them to come to ours and things like that. And that's always a big help.
The problem is somebody's got to make the first leap. Somebody's got to make the drive first.
And we've been trying to pile up. I mean, I'd say recently travel hasn't been as strong. I mean, I remember I traveled to KC a couple months ago, and they've traveled here a few times. But I feel like once Mark II kicks up, we're going to see a lot more.
Well, you know, as we've already said, the dust has to settle a little bit. We need to get the cards for Hordes and the book. And I think we'll start to see a little more settling of the meta and stuff in general.
I like it.
That's right. That's all I got to say about it.
So back to your list.
Yeah.
No, I actually did have a list question. Are we done with this concept? Because I think we are. I think it was very nice and rounded. What as you are quote unquote undefeated currently, what are you worried about seeing? Like, what does your list rely on that perhaps you can be denied of?
I'd say infantry swarm. Like, anyone that can prevent me from getting clearly through their lines, or, you know, make it hard for me to cast spells. Like, if people take out my arc nodes, it makes it a little harder to, get my spells out there if I lose my Scarlock. Because the ability, I think where this list is strong, is being able to make any unit a threat at any point in time. Like, oh, you ran up and engaged my Bane Thralls. Well, no, you didn't. They just walked through your unit.
So maybe a unit of druids would give you fits.
Yeah, they might not be that fun.
Because you can't cast anything on any of it.
Yeah.
But I haven't run into anything yet that makes me worried. But then again, I worry all the time. Like, when I first see an army, everything's going through my head. Like, okay, what do I need to do? How am I going to throw this person off their game? And once I get into it, it'll become pretty obvious what they fear the most. Sometimes they'll straight up be like, oh man, like Bane Thralls. I hate Bane Thralls. I always lose to them. At that point, you're like, oh, okay, I can use that to really keep them from going after my Warjacks. Or, you know, if I see they have a lot of shooting, I will keep a Bone Jack like in my back ranks until I need it to cast a spell somewhere. And,
cool.
You know, the Siren is great for that one focus point to be like, oh, and my Bone Jack's now over there.
Absolutely.
We haven't done this in a while, but let's do the what would you do with your faction against this list? You know, we haven't done that in a while.
Yeah, he's like staring at
everybody else is like, what?
Yeah, I think that my general Epic Madrak build actually would be very good against it, just because I do bring a crap ton of infantry and my buff stacking. Like, I had three Creel Warriors kill a Warpulf the other day, and it was pretty awesome. And since then, you know, it's been anything can kill anyone. Like, I can kill a caster. You know, I can drop Incorporeal off Epic Denagra whenever I choose to. I've obviously got magical weapons on Madrak, and he can throw them. You know, just lots of dudes. I mean, dealing with a unit of Fenblades with a unit of Bane Thralls, they're gonna be hanging out for a while. And being able to run into position and pop feet and just mow down a lot of troops will be really helpful. And as you said, being able to position rows and rows and rows of stuff is very good. And if you can't get the arc nodes, now grant you do have two, but if you can't get the arc nodes back there to clear out, say, some stone guys, I mean, Epic Madrak will be fine, because you can only get so many Bane Thralls on the charge. Even with TARDIS, they're only 10-inch charges without reach. Mm-hmm. So I think that could work.
I think for Circle, there are so many stupidly long assassination threat ranges that sending some things to force you to feet might give me the chance to really go in that next turn and kill you. I mean, hitting the Negra's the hard part. Killing her isn't after you've hit her.
You have quite a bit of spells, too, you can throw at her.
Oh, sure.
When she's in Corporeal.
Absolutely, you can. Yeah, you know, Epic Kai and Chromac can do the long-range assassination thing if they want to. You could even Mosar might even be able to pick her apart with spells if you could get away with
and
it.
And she's undead, so you would get erosion.
That's only if you get a melee with her, really.
But you could.
Oh, sure,
you could potentially, like, if you could get
run
a warrior mall in.
Pop him up there and then.
Not just run him, if you could pull off getting someone up there just somehow.
Sure, sure.
Who has a magical weapon who's just hanging out in your army?
The Warpulf.
Yeah, any of the druids, really. The Pureblood has magic weapons too. Yeah, all the Wold do, I think.
Yeah, the Wolds do, yeah. But the Pureblood has a magical spray as well.
He does, which
you
could
really put some some damage
on
it.
So I think there's some long range aspects of Circle that'll help out.
And druids.
Sure, absolutely.
Yeah. I think, you know, honestly, I mean, not to completely disrupt the topic, but I think one reason we haven't done this lately is because the factions have been branched out so far now.
Right, it's rough.
But that said, well, everything burns, and it goes without saying. If I can throw fire out on the table, I can take care of things. I probably will have enough infantry to clog up those lanes if I'm playing the Protectorate. And on top of that, I'm going to have some of my defensive buffs. A Bane Knight is a mat 6.
Mm-hmm.
With Tartars, it's an 8.
It's an 8.
But if I can get someone with high defense and throw Defender's Ward on it, like he doesn't have the Wither Shadow Combine to remove spells. So if I can defensive buff people, it's going to be hard to hit him, or he's going to have to use his feet. So that's going to be handy. I have my big jacks, too, that are going to try and either trample over lines or do their thing.
Mm-hmm.
As far as the Legion goes, though, well, there's going to be a lot of sprays, probably.
Yeah.
Sprays.
And sprays are going to eat up that stuff. Yeah, and also, I'll throw a heavy out there if I've got another one in charge range of the Nightmare. If it means if it means killing off the infantry and just wiping the table of a big threat.
Mm-hmm.
Now, obviously, there's a lot of, especially when playing Carnavian's low defense, those spells, I mean, she's going to start debuffing the crap out of my stuff.
And Bane Thralls will eat you.
Yeah, that's why I got to spray them. And sprays ignore stealth, that's the one big benefit there.
Especially 10-inch ones.
Especially 10-inch ones. But yeah, it's going to be about the threat range with them. You know, especially their beasts are going to have to do the work. That's the problem, though, is their beasts are, it's going to be mostly beasts, and Bane Thralls, like you said, eat beasts.
Maybe kill her with Hellfires from Saren.
If I'm playing Saren, sure, yeah.
That's so stupid she has Hellfire.
It's possible.
But I actually Saren probably be a good match
because mm-hmm.
in the end he's got melee. You pretty much counter feet.
Mm-hmm.
You know if you run him up, you've got a feat to stop the Carnivians from killing you. Or
yep,
you pop your feet. And even then they can spray unless they're engaged.
I think in general Hordes actually probably does better against this list just simply due to the fact of transferring damage. Because while I can get models past your line, I can only really do so much damage to you in one hit.
Not necessarily damage, but just so many attacks. Because if you can transfer an attack, you know, Bane Thrall is going to deal a crap ton of damage.
Yeah, well, any army that's trying to sacrifice most of it to make a hole for one thing, if that one thing doesn't do the job, then they've sacrificed their defense to make their offensive strike. Which means if they didn't protect themselves adequately, which it's harder to do with fewer models, then yeah, their opponent's counterattack can be very deadly. And you might get Seether in on a Warcaster and maybe kill a beast or two with transfers. But if they have even one big hitter within range of your caster that you didn't stop, then you're in trouble.
I would say to do... Oh, go ahead.
I was going
to
say, the one difference, I think, though, is that while I will sacrifice models with Cricks to get that assassination in, I haven't put models in just as damaged. Looks like, if I was wanting to do that, I would just load this up with 30 Bane... Like, or not Bane Thralls, Mechanithrals.
Mechanithrals.
Sure. So these can handle it. Like, the Troll Army, because I need those flags, I had to pick apart his list, which... really, once I took his caster out of the equation, wasn't as big of a problem. But they still, between the Mechanithrals and the Bane Thralls, have a lot of damage and potential on their own. So it really depends on how your opponent's playing. I think you really, well, like I said to you guys in the email, you really have to be able to read your opponent with the army.
Absolutely. Yeah. I was going to say, from Cotter's point of view, too, I'd say a little fluff piece with the Old Witch.
I would totally take the Old Witch. I played her last Wednesday. After Daikon, I was feeling the call, so I put the Signar away for a little bit, and then started playing Kador again. Old Witch would be really good. Just the feat alone gives you you could counter feat just to put her stuff in place, because they advance and end in your control area. It's an unboostable POW 14. All the infantry dies. Pretty much
can't run a bone jack in there either without the risk of taking a pretty good hit.
Yeah.
Damage roll, and there goes that Arcanine.
Well, even if you roll, it's really going to come down to what column you roll, because an average roll with column 4 would take out an Arc Node. Mm-hmm. Done.
That's the way it always happens, by the way.
Yes, it is.
It does. Well, she has a sniper on her feet.
And I would take my favorite unit, Grey Lords.
You don't say.
You don't say.
I think Cold Lord.
I played them last Wednesday, and they did pretty well. I mean, they weren't.
They're not bad. They still have power 12.
It's the insult that every other magic unit that's 3 models has 5 wounds.
Yep.
Like that's the insult. But I played with the Behemoth. It was okay, but I'd probably take a Destroyer next time instead to free up some points for some other stuff. You know, I can, they can out, we can out melee Kricks, no problem. So I think, you know, take, I think the key is to be able to put a threat on everything. So, you know, a destroyer or the behemoth can shoot the Seether, have some of your infantry or a mortar or something take care of the Mechanothralls, because they're going to be kind of clumped up because of low command. Mm-hmm. And then I'd probably try to use Grey Lords to take out Bane Thralls.
All I have to say is that I feel like, have you ran up against the Winter Guard Death Star yet with that list?
No, I have not.
It's like, that would be pretty troublesome. Threat.
Could you explain what that is? Because a lot of people have told us that.
I hate the term Winter Guard Death Star, but it's become so commonly used that I use it just because people reference it. Sure, it's essentially just a full unit of Winter Guard. And when I mean full, I mean thick, like Aretha. I mean, it is full unit, trip, rockets, UA, and you got Joe. And it's just as annoying because with so many sprays, because they have special, they do have the ability to special attack spray, and that's gonna, you know, it's gonna hurt, and that's a lot of them. And I don't believe Epic Denigra has a way to deny special attacks.
No,
and as much as I hate to let people know this, the spray does say it is a special attack, even though it's just on the back of the card, doesn't have like a little star attack. It does say you make a special attack spray. So if you can Crippling Grasp, or if you do have a feat that denies that, or if you can. What's it called? Does Rebuke get rid of special attacks?
I don't think so. I think it's
just orders, isn't it?
Can't give or receive orders.
Well, that's sweet then, too. So, yeah, the Winter Guard Death Star is pretty cool. It just hits from all time. And then this guy was like, well, I'm going to run a Seether in. And then I killed the Seether with the Winter Guard.
See, something like that, that's where Hellmouth is for, is giant
oh, yeah.
Of troops. Because it's like, oh, you have a whole bunch of mauls there? Well, I just suck them all in and they all take a power 12.
But you've got, you know, you're going to be sacrificing an Arknode. You're going to be sacrificing an Arknode to do that. And if you don't kill enough, then it won't work. And she's command 9. So, I mean, I'd feel like it'd be pretty good. And if they are moving up and getting the boosted attack rolls, the spray, they're going to be killing stuff. So they're probably going to be making some points. Then you move up your Arknode to Hellmouth them. And if it's early, they'll all have tough, which would be pretty nice from Joe.
Yeah.
But I mean, I'm not saying it's guaranteed or anything. And yes, Hellmouth I've seen destroy. I killed an entire unit of Wolves Warbros with Hellmouth once. It was really awesome.
Well, here's the thing.
Sorry, go.
No, I was just going to say the Arknode has to move up, and then it's within spray range because the spell range is 8 inches. Mm-hmm. So if it can hit you with the spell and you don't kill everything, you're getting at least 2 or 3
sprays. You're getting blunderbuss.
Well, yeah,
shot
blunderbuss,
boosted blunderbuss shots all over your face.
And oh, that's well, this is a little 12. Bit of Fury Machine.
Sure,
right. Setup,
yeah.
So, right.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, no, but general, it's obviously. Yeah, just to say face for face, I'd say that a large form of infantry will do well. You know, it's actually not that many points either. It's only 13 points total for that, Joe.
That's a threat to almost anything, though.
It's a threat to almost anything, so it's pretty cool.
Cool.
What were you going to say?
Oh, nothing. I was just going to say, well, that's where Pursuit comes in handy.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, Pursuit's so good.
It's, you know, once you throw that on a model, or once you throw that on early on, if people forget about it, which I find people generally forget about something that's not directly negatively affecting a model, they'll do something like, oh, my guys stand up, okay, and they move here to get some positioning, and, oh, wait, where's your bone jack just gone?
Oh, it's yep. Left. Crap. Absolutely. No, I like it, too. I think it's very interesting. I mean, you are spending focus to do it, so hopefully you're able to. I mean, between wanting to cast Hellmouth and wanting to cast Curse of Shadows, Mark for Death, you know, you do, you know, run into focus issues. Or at least I found when I try to cast spells with her. Whenever I played Epic Denigra, as a matter of fact, I never cast spells. I just ran no Arknodes and just ran
every time. Full focus. It's all about when and where you need to cast the spells. And really with this army, more like Circle, using the terrain. Like, I park everything near terrain. And once I'm in zones contesting stuff, I kind of wait for people to get within my range. Like, because I can suddenly sit, you know, units on the edge of a forest because I can, you know, cast a spell so I can see them. Or
and yeah, new Ghost Walk is so good because you get ghostly and just so much better.
Yeah.
Yep. Sweet. She is terrifying.
Sounds good.
You know, talking about the focus efficiency, we were talking about this earlier, and I'm seeing it across a lot of War Machine is, casters tend, it seems like they're a lot of times they tend to run more empty than they used to in Mark One, you'd cast a spell, maybe two, and you'd have 3 or 4 mm-hmm. focus to sit on, maybe less, depending. But now I'm seeing a lot of casters when they go and do stuff, I don't know if it's because the spell costs have changed enough or just their spells in general. They tend to either have one focus or none. Mm-hmm. It seems like a lot of them are strapped because they can't do everything.
I think that's what makes someone like Epic Asphyxius so annoying, because he doesn't have to cast anything.
No, he doesn't.
He upkeeps Hellmouth every turn, which you can get for free with the Wither Shadow. So you pretty much have...
Or anybody who can... take a turn to get a bunch of, like, Terminus or Epicura.
Right.
Sure. Mm-hmm. I mean, without, if you can tag with Epigarus, you're going to have a good day. But other than that, you're pretty short of being able to kill that guy.
Maybe it's our area, but generally I've always seen people with only one or two focus left on them.
Yeah, I think it's becoming more common.
Mm-hmm. I think it's a meta choice.
Yeah.
It all depends. I mean, I've been playing, like, I played so much Strakov, and my biggest problem with him is he has to spend focus to become efficient. And granted, he's very efficient, and what he does is very good, but I see myself usually with one focus every turn, and I don't like it.
Okay. All Sounds right. good.
Before we go, I have a request. Lucas, a couple years ago, I sent you some wrap snacks, no?
Yes, you did. Those were very yummy. And I also sent you some candy back, and I haven't yet.
Do you think you could regale us with the reason I sent you the wrap snacks in the first place?
Oh, God.
Oh, God. Well, you had a competition to write a wrap, and I can't remember whether I was late or what, but...
You were the only one. You were the only one.
I was the only one in the end. And then eventually I found they had rock snacks or something, too, which you guys don't know where they are.
Oh, yeah. We
rock
didn't
rock snacks?
Yeah. Instead of wrap snacks, rocks.
Oh, I thought it was, like, cocaine.
Well, that, too.
Yeah. Some rocks.
Some booger sugar.
Just go to North County and get all that stuff.
But yeah, I sang an awful rap, which a couple of my players who listened to the podcast were like, wait, 1 minute, because they recognized my voice at the end of it. But no, that was fun.
What does it sound like? What does that rap sound like?
Yeah, I want you to call up the file right now and read off the lyrics.
Oh, wow.
I don't know. Let me see.
Oh, sorry, guys. It got deleted.
Oh, yeah. I had to get a new computer.
No, I haven't changed computers since then. Let me see.
I've had three computers since then.
I could also just probably find the sound file, but I couldn't probably play it for
you. Might have to edit back in.
Either way, it's going to be pointed to one way or another, because the episode still exists.
Probably the Vlad rap, right?
Yes, it was the Vlad rap.
Oh, the Vlad rap.
Yeah. I had another one that was a reworded rap, but it was kind of vocal, and there's no way I could sing it. I don't. Oh yeah, it was.
I want some porters.
I'm just gonna say it because I can't even remember the beat anymore. But when killing casters every game, I'm a surefire bet. From the first round of play, I'm a nationals threat. I'm a king among casters, well ahead of the curve. I cause experienced players to lose their nerve. I'm a hardcore ringer, as we have all seen. And it's all because of my feet, Blood Legacy. But yeah, that was back when he was much better. Yeah.
Good juice. That's awesome. Yeah, that was right around the...
I've been killing Kraken.
That was in the heyday of Mark 1.
That's right.
Yeah. Oh, I miss Mark 1.
Yeah.
I don't.
Remember the Wither Shadow Combines card? It was like... Yeah. Remember the Deathjack's text on the back of the Mark 1 card?
The Harbinger's spell list.
I'm kind of glad we will never see that again. In fact, I think I remember someone saying at one point they've now implemented a minimum text size. So if they ever create something where it couldn't fit on the card, obviously stuff needs to be taken away from it.
It's interesting.
Yeah, it's probably like Orthal.
Or they give you two cards.
Like Orthal, where they take away Commander. Even though he's a fucking Commander.
He's not a Commander.
He's a Command 10.
You never know.
Before Jason goes into that.
That's true. Yeah, he could be a Commander, which, once again, why is he not a Commander?
All right, so now that I'm editing all that whining of trolls out.
Commander.
Dick bubble.
Commander. I made a dick bubble list the other day. I'm really interested in trying out, but it's not the true dick bubble because it is missing one jack. So I don't know how it'll fare because of it, but it has so many units.
Maybe you can talk about that next time.
Yeah, I will.
I think we're heading into hour three now.
So. Hour seven.
Hour seven of the telethon. Please send us your orphan children.
And wrap snacks.
What?
For sound effects.
Oh, yeah. For Apple sound effects.
Oh, right.
Was that a fist?
Send more children.
I'm going to go get some fried chicken now.
Lucas, thanks for coming on. This was fun having you on.
Thanks very much.
We'll do it again.
Thanks for having me. Yeah, definitely. It was very enjoyable being on the show. Nice to sit and talk about War Machine with people that are from a different meta.
A different country. You're the first international guest.
Oh, am I still the first international?
The first one on the show.
You interviewed Sam.
We did. I interviewed Sam.
Oh, yeah. I meant,
as a matter of fact,
you were the interviewee.
That was the best interview ever.
first live on air at the same time.
Yes, absolutely.
Okay. First awesome. Live on air where it's not live or on air.
It's live recorded. Of course, all recorded.
If you're in front of the studio audience.
If you used a wireless network connection to download this, it came through the air.
We're going
to
do it in front of a studio audience.
Again?
You guys just wait.
All right. So I guess that's about it for us.
Yep.
There you go.
All right.
Sayonara. All right, guys.
See everyone.
Bye.
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 To contact Iron Agenda by email, send your message to contact@ironagenda.com. To send a voicemail, dial 206-333-0983. Iron Agenda is copyright 2010 by its hosts and released under the Creative Commons Attribution No Derivative Works 3.0 United States license. Opening and closing music provided by Joshua Salter. Iron Agenda is affiliated with Spooky Outhouse Productions. For more podcasts, visit www.spookyouthouse.com.